The Supreme Court shakes things up and readies the arrival of a new justice. We'll talk about it on The Uprising.
LibertyNation.com. They're the resistance, but we are The Uprising, with Scott Cosenza and Tim Donner.
There's not going to be a President Donald Trump.
Hey, a president! Can you believe it?
I love the poorly educated.
The voters have guaranteed themselves slavery, economic disaster.
I can't believe I'm losing to this guy.
You could put half of Trump's supporters into what I call the basket of deplorables.
I have never met with Russians.
Our elected representatives can abuse subordinates and then secretly use a slush fund of our money to pay them off.
Black Lives Matter, the Antifa movement, is interested in preserving the fabric of America.
This is The Uprising, the podcast of LibertyNation.com. I'm Tim Donner. So, three big cases settled by the Supremes this week. That would have been more than enough for the court watchers and average citizens to chew on for a good long time. But then, even that explosive trio of decisions was overshadowed by the announcement that Justice Anthony Kennedy is stepping down, clearing the way for President Trump to nominate a Neil Gorsuch-type replacement who will undoubtedly swing the court further in the constitutional direction. So let's start there as we welcome in LibertyNation.com legal affairs editor Scott Cosenza. And Scott, the left is all hysterical about the Kennedy retirement, but just to provide an accurate picture of the key role Anthony Kennedy has played on this court for the longest time, we've essentially had four leftist justices, four constitutionalist justices, and a swing vote. First, Sandra Day O'Connor, and then Anthony Kennedy, both right of center, but hardly like Scalia or Thomas. Now, I've heard more than one lawyer say that most of these landmark cases on hot-button issues, in most of these cases, a lower court ultimately says, let's send it up to D.C. to see what Anthony Kennedy thinks. And some have argued that he's been de facto the most powerful man in America. But on the other hand, I still can't help but think this is something of an overreaction, because replacing Kennedy with a Scalia-Gorsuch type justice doesn't really change the fundamental ideological composition of the court the way the retirement of one of the four leftist justices would.
I think that's right.
I mean, 6-3 is a lot different than 5-4, and the right, so to speak, or the constitutionalists are getting in the 5-4 decisions, they're getting Justice Kennedy to go along with most of them, but not all of them.
For most, Justice Kennedy has written, I think, all of the major gay rights, homosexual kind of freedom cases that we've had in the past decade. So for that major social issue, anyway, Kennedy has been not on the right on those cases. He wrote Obergefell, the case declaring that that the Constitution protects gay marriage and always has, as a matter of fact. That's what that decision says. So it's hardly a conservative decision. So I think that while it may be overblown, certainly some of the hysteria I've seen, some of the reaction I've seen borders on hysteria and is therefore overblown. But he was a swing vote, and he did, you know, he was not a reliable vote for the conservative bloc. And I would say that it's not necessarily a small government bloc. There are small government people on that court, okay, but for instance, Justice Alito is certainly not a small government type.
Yeah.
Justice Roberts voted that the Constitution allows the government to tax people for not buying health insurance, let's recall, and for imposing a scheme to require Americans to buy a low benefit, high deductible, high premium insurance policy. Those, I don't see that as a conservative notion, Tim. How those lines play out is a little more subtle, I think. And I think it will be a big deal if we get a replacement for Justice Kennedy that's like Justice Gorsuch. You know, whether we do get that or not, and we don't necessarily know. You know, we have a good sense of Justice Gorsuch's jurisprudence because of the experience we have with his basically a year and a half long tenure now on the court. But it takes a few years for us to really, as court watchers, kind of get a sense. I mean, to get a real sense of like where the nuance is with their constitutional thinking and where they're going to draw the line for some of these decisions. For the broad strokes, maybe we can point to other opinions that give us a sense. But it takes years of watching their jurisprudence for that to kind of fully come out. So we'll see, Tim, whether or not Justice Gorsuch is, you know, who we think he is today. In other words, is that borne out? And I think he is more of a libertarianish type justice than Justice Scalia was. Perhaps Justice Kennedy's replacement will be an improvement. We have the list of justices that,
right,
that Trump released.
And that list is critical because that's the list that produced Gorsuch and a couple of dozen others. And now I presume he's going to go back to that well again.
The Supreme Court is our third branch of government, and in fact, in many ways, it's the most important branch because there, with the exception of constitutional amendments, there is no appeal from any one of their decisions. So they are, I think it was a Justice Kennedy or Powell, somebody said that the Supreme Court is not the last word because they're infallible. They're infallible because they are the last word.
Right. So they speak ex cathedra, as Catholics would say about the Pope. But let's get to the travel ban.
But I wanted, just let me finish my point there, which was that Donald Trump gave this list prior to the election so that the public could vote. You know, this was an issue in the election, and he said, these are the people who I will consider for the court. So if this is an important question for you ahead of time, not this some black box that other candidates say, well, we're going to consider all the, of course you're going to consider all the highly qualified candidates, but we all know that's a bunch of junk. You've got a short list. Who's on your short list? And Trump disclosed it. So whether you like him or not, at least you had the facts before you made the judgment on the election.
And certainly many who voted for Trump voted for him, maybe not only because, but certainly primarily because of what he would do with the Supreme Court.
Well, Tim, I think that if you look at Justice Ginsburg's health and age and temperament, you have to think that she would be the number three if Hillary were in office. So that would be three picks that Hillary would have on the court instead of, at least for so far anyway, Trump having two.
Well,
it's
right
a
now,
remarkable difference we'll see in America in the coming years because of these picks.
Well, right now, it seems that a certainty that none of those leftist justices will leave the court other than in a pine box, and that for two and a half years of the Trump presidency, they may survive. Hard to see them surviving six, though.
Well, Ginsburg, I think, is the only person on that court who seems to be so old that she would seem ready to go. Justice Kagan, Justice Sotomayor, they're not old
and
people.
And Breyer. Breyer's not too old either.
And let's recall, they're not North Sea oil rig platform workers. You know, it's a pretty cushy office job. So I think it can be handled by somebody who's more senior in years.
So, Scott, let's talk travel ban in terms of what the court ruled and the significant admonishment issued by Justice Thomas against the lower court judges who single-handedly ground the wheels of the Trump administration to a halt for more than a year when it came to immigration and travel arrangements.
Yes, that's right. The case is Trump v. Hawaii, and it consolidated some of the lower court cases where in federal district courts in Hawaii, in Maryland, in Washington State, and at least one other, judges ruled that the travel restrictions, or what's popularly been called the travel ban, or in the Democrat Party circles and anti-Trump circles, the Muslim ban.
Right.
So this case didn't rule on the legality of the Trump administration's actions itself. What happened was the Trump administration put forth these restrictions, said they were going to enforce them. These people sued to have that behavior stopped with the claim that it was unconstitutional because of an anti-religious bias and anti-Muslim bias, violating the Establishment Clause, and enacted an injunction, basically, that prevented the administration from enforcing the rules. The Trump administration challenged the injunction and said,
right,
let the policy be enforced while the case is fought. District court said no. The the people are likely to win their case ultimately, and therefore the injunction is appropriate. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals agreed. Other circuit courts of appeals agreed. And then the Supreme Court says, we'll take a look at this injunction. And they rule this week, Tim, that the injunction was improperly granted, that the in this case, I believe it was the Attorney General for the state of Hawaii. It's one of these sort of typical things where this is, you know, a Democrat politician who's looking to make a name for himself, challenges the ban to make a stink against the evil Trump administration, and he's going to be the, our hero. Well, as it turns out, not the case here. And the Supreme Court has said that the injunction was not properly granted, and in fact, they're likely to lose at trial, that the administration is likely to win, that the restrictions that they have imposed are likely not motivated by impermissible religious bias, and that the controlling the immigration functions of our country is how the Constitution is set up. The executive does control that. So that's what they said. It was a 5-4 decision. All the big decisions this week were 5-4, right, and almost all the big decisions this term were 5-4. Justice Thomas, I'm sure you appreciated it, wrote extensively about the lower court in his opinion. I think we've talked about it previously, Tim, about how kind of gobsmacked we are that, you know, any federal district court judge now feels comfortable deciding these national policy things. And what Justice Thomas said was it wouldn't even be appropriate for you to grant a injunction for the plaintiffs in this case that you've identified, whether that's citizens of Hawaii, if you're the AG of Hawaii, or if you've somebody's hired a private attorney. But you as a district judge can't decide for every human being in the world that this is an appropriate injunction to issue. That's far afield from your grant of authority. And so that's right. What Justice Thomas
sort of
took
saying,
time to point out.
Sort of saying stay in your lane at the district court level. Let's move on to another fairly earth-shaking decision on the issue of compelling individuals to join a public union or to pay fees to a public union in order to get a public sector job, like a teacher or a cop or a trash collector. This overturns a decision 40 years ago by the High Court. How far-reaching is this decision likely to be?
I think it's huge, Tim. I think that 20 years from now, we'll look back on the destruction of public labor unions and the power that they wield, both in policy and in sort of partisan electoral circles. They're very formidable right now. They control the Democrat parties in large cities and in many states. They get a significant source of their power from their ability to dole out these campaign contributions and also just straight sort of manpower, the votes and getting out the vote sort of things. These unions are very politically active. And what they do is they use money that they get from people, whether, you know, so just if we can recap. So if you take a job as a cop, as a teacher in many jurisdictions, you have to join the local union. And if you don't join, you get a small refund for the political activities, but you still have to have compelled money taken out of your paycheck. So you get your paycheck and it's whatever amount is gone for the union fee. And if you say, well, they don't speak for me, I don't like them, I don't want to be involved in them, they say, well, that's fine, but tough. The government has decided that that's your bargaining unit person, and if you don't like it, you can either quit or stay or not. That's your choice. And the Supreme Court has said that amounts to compelled speech by requiring these employees to pay for representatives that were assigned to them against their will. That's compelled speech, and it violates the First Amendment. That was the majority's ruling. Now, the minority in this case, Justice Sotomayor had a brief, like, couple-paragraph dissent, but mainly the dissent was Kagan's that everybody had signed on to, including Sotomayor. And Justice Kagan spent her entire dissent concerned with how much of the apple cart this ruling was going to upset. There are many, many state laws, regulatory rules in place, and federal, too, that are reliant on the Abood decision is the name of the decision that you were referencing earlier from years ago that established that this kind of taking of people's money against their will was okay. And the majority here said it's not okay. It was a mistake to make that ruling, and we have to overturn it to enforce this man's rights. And the minority claim was basically like, well, it's going to be a real big problem, though. And
right,
so,
right.
Yeah, it is going to be a big problem, but
deference to the administrative state
over the First Amendment rights. And I think that presents to me, Tim, a very clear delineating line between the type of justice that some people want and other people's want. And I want the kind of justice who says, I understand that this is going to be a difficult problem for a lot of government systems and resources, but this man has a First Amendment right to not have compelled speech, and we have to uphold that, rather than some other people who would say, well, it's going to be a significant cost and burden, and his right to, you know, it's a small imposition on him.
Right, right.
But we weren't established as a nation, that I recall, our founding fathers' great and beautiful language to your rights are important unless there's an imposition on the administrative state, and then they're not.
I think it's important, too, to distinguish between private and public unions. I think everybody agrees that a private union is between employers and their bosses. But even the legendary head of the AFL-CIO, George Meany, said it's impossible to bargain collectively with the government. And no less progressive a figure than Franklin Delano Roosevelt said a strike by public employees is unthinkable and intolerable. Those are FDR's words, and yet the union movement is treating this like a fundamental right has been eliminated by the court. Let's get to the last of the triumvirate of big decisions by the Supremes relating to what pro-life or crisis pregnancy clinics can be forced to tell women seeking their advice and counsel.
In California, these exist in other places too, but this is a case out of California where they set up these crisis pregnancy centers. It's sort of like an anti-abortion clinic. They're designed to get women who may seek abortion services to not consider abortions and consider alternatives to abortions. The people in California who passed this law didn't like that. They wanted these women to be able to get abortion services without having to go through the encounter of dealing with someone who was trying to get them to not have an abortion. And so they just decided to pass a law to make those people...
You have to tell them about abortions.
Have to tell them about these abortions. So what they did was they required... There were sort of two separate requirements, one for centers that had a medical license and one that didn't. And they included notice requirements that they publish in like a dozen languages, information on how to get an abortion, about cost subsidy payments that may be available in the state for abortion, just burdensome requirements both for their sort of print advertising and billboards and also for their actual speech and handouts that they would have to give the people who come into their offices. So the court says, that is a impermissible, again, compelled speech, again, 5-4 ruling, same split. Conservative bloc, Roberts, Alito, Thomas and Gorsuch, Kennedy joining for the majority. In the minority, you've got Kagan, Ginsburg, Breyer, and Ginsburg. So same split. And again, compelled speech. And again, we have the liberal bloc okay with the government imposing words on in people's mm-hmm. mouths when it suits, it seems like, a larger policy goal of allowing for... frustrating people who want to frustrate those who want an abortion, if you can wrap your head around that. And they lost. So I think that's a good win for liberty, Tim, because think of what you will of the abortion issue. To allow the state to tell one group that they disfavor, that they have to put words in their mouth when they're dealing with someone else, it doesn't seem to me how that can be a permissible infringement upon their free speech rights.
Well, thank you, Scott, and thanks for your outstanding coverage of a very busy week at the Supreme Court. I don't imagine that you've gotten a whole lot of sleep this week.
I haven't.
All right. Thank you, Scott.
Thanks, Tim.
Have the facts at your fingertips with the new LibertyNation.com app. Simply download LibertyNation.com from the Apple App Store or Google Play Store and be good to go on the go. This is The Uprising, the podcast of LibertyNation.com. I'm Tim Donner.